Good morning. This is First Things, brought to you by Jackson's First Presbyterian Church. The minister of the First Presbyterian Church is Dr. Ligon Duncan. Stay tuned for First Things. Here with First Things is Dr. Ligon Duncan.
Thank you, Bill Wyman. This is Ligon Duncan, your co-host for First Things, along with my friend, colleague, and co-host, Derek Thomas. Good morning, Derek. How are you?
I'm well.
It's good to see you today.
Good to be back.
And good to be back. You have been in South Africa.
Yes.
For a couple of weeks.
I have been in summer as opposed to winter.
And you have posted some fantastic pictures on the weblog of First Presbyterian Church, including one of a sunset.
In Cape Town.
In Cape Town, which was stunning. Digital camera? Is that what? Is that your little pocket digital camera?
You know, these days all you do is point and click and all the work's done for you. But
the colors in the sky.
I actually stayed for a couple of days in the location where all of the postcards for Cape Town are taken from this view of Table Mountain. And one of the members of the Baptist church that I was preaching at on Sunday has a bed and breakfast establishment. And on the roof of his house was this beautiful, beautiful view. So I just took a picture of it.
Wow. Well, it's gorgeous. And we've got a couple of lions that have appeared.
Oh, yes.
One that is distinctly grown and Aslan-like, and one who is a cub taking a snooze.
With a big tummy.
With a big tummy and lots of bloody meat right in front of him. So definitely not a tame lion. But, check out the weblog. You can go to fpcjackson.org and then click on the weblog and see some of Derek's pictures from South Africa. And I trust that we're going to hear more from you on this. Are you going to tell us more about the South Africa journey at some point via Ref 21 or the weblog? Or
yes, and not least because one of the speakers there were three of us doing the speaking, and one spoke on a delicate and sensitive issue of racism in a South African
context.
And
you were impressed.
I was very impressed. Nelson Kalafungwe from Zambia, who had present is in South Africa, but he's on his way back again. He's taken a call back in Zambia and moves in our sort of larger circles. Has written for the Banner of Truth magazine.
We should try and follow up with an interview on that. In fact, let me just mention this before I introduce our special guest, but Tabiti Anyabwile, who is the elder who sort of chairs session meetings at Capitol Hill Baptist Church in Washington, D.C., has just written on the subject of Christianity and race relations and such, and I think the manuscript has been accepted by InterVarsity Press. And Mark Dever tells me it's the best thing he's ever seen on the subject. So that would be actually quite an interesting thing to follow up with. But I want to introduce to our listening audience a friend, Stacy Andrews. Good morning, Stacy.
Good morning.
Stacy is the pastor of The Journey in Fondren. And let me tell you just a little bit about him. Stacy was born in Tupelo. Is that right?
Tupelo, Mississippi.
Elvis's hometown.
Never met him, but
never met Elvis.
We share a birthplace.
And you are married to Stacy.
Yes.
Stacy and Stacy Lee Andrews. That's great. Does that still shock people when you say I'm Stacy, this is Stacy?
Yes. Every time we write a check, the sales clerk always acts as if they're the first person to recognize
it. Do you spell
it
the same way?
Yes.
Can you even spell it the same way? That is great. You have a son named Parker who is a black belt in Taekwondo.
Yes. Don't mess with him.
Definitely not. A daughter named Penny Rose. Does she go by both? Or
she does.
Penny Rose. And she wants a pink pony.
She actually wants to be a pink pony.
To be
yes.
a pink pony. That's great. You're in Fondren. You were educated at Mississippi College. You did graduate school in Seattle. You studied at Reformed Theological Seminary. I'm looking at your reading list, everything from Freakonomics, which is a hot book today, Radical Reformation by Mark Driscoll. Do you know Mark?
Yes.
You met Mark when you were in Seattle, or?
Yes, the journey. Our church is actually in a network called Acts 29.
The Acts 29 network, okay.
Which he co-founded.
I'm going to draw you out on that just a little bit, because I was just reading. Mark, interestingly, has only just now started to blog. And for those of you in the radio audience who have no idea what I've just said, a blog is just a short term for a weblog, which is a special kind of website where you can write things and other people can interact with you on it. It's actually a very interesting and informative mode of communication, which has, in the last year or so, really done wonders for keeping the mainstream media in line and various other things. But Mark is a very well-known minister of the congregation is called Mars Hill. Is that right?
Mars Hill Church downtown Seattle.
In Seattle, Washington. In his web, in his first web entry, he says that you could get all of the heterosexual white evangelical ministers in Seattle in a phone booth.
I think he's correct, yes.
At any rate, so his book, Radical Reformation, is one that you have been reading, Jesus with Dirty Feet, a book that I think I've seen the cover of, but which I haven't seen the book of, The End for Which God Created the World by Jonathan Edwards. So along with Mark Driscoll, and Don Everts, we have Jonathan Edwards, Narnia by Lewis, Martin Luther, Christian Liberty, etc. You listen to U2, How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb. What's your favorite song off the album?
My favorite song off that album would be probably the song he wrote for his father on there, that he sang at his father's funeral.
Wow. Cheryl Crow, Derek Webb, She Must and Shall Go Free. Sammy, my husband, one of our youth guys here, gave that to me a number of years ago. Big Screen, let's see, Shawshank Redemption features here. Most of these I've never seen. Whale Rider, Waking Ned Divine, Garden State, Sixth Sense, Life Aquatic, Memento, Millions, Motorcycle Diaries. Sorry, I'm lost on that. I'm obviously not with it, Stacy.
Well, I like slow-paced, boring movies.
I like movies where you don't have to think. I want to be entertained. Don't teach me a lesson. So, King Kong, that's my kind of a flick, okay? The giant gorilla going after four Tyrannosaurus Rexes. That's about my speed for movies. But we're delighted to have you here. First of all, let me ask you this. Tell us about the journey.
The journey is a new church in Jackson, located in the Fondren neighborhood. We're about a year and a half old. We launched in September of 2004 and developed a core group the summer preceding that. And we started with about 15 people. I remember meeting in my living room at one point, just kind of sharing our vision and our dream. And it really stemmed out of a real heart for the unreached in our community, drawn particularly to Fondren. It's kind of a neighborhood filled with a lot of young creatives, a lot of people from out of state, a lot of people moving back into the city. And so we kind of modeled that ourselves after living in Madison for a number of years, moving into Fondren with our kids. And I've had a great time since then, and our heart is for just to live among people moving back into the city and to be a church expression for them.
And how did you become a Christian?
Well, I remember growing up, my father was a truck driver, and so he would be out during the week and home on weekends, and I remember my mother probably every night reading a Bible story to us as we would go to sleep. And that really solidified a lot of, particularly the stories of the Old Testament, stories about Jesus. I mean, even to this day, when I read the ones that are most familiar, I can almost, hear it in her voice. And so she taught the Bible to myself and my sister at an early age. Came to faith at about the age of 9 and was baptized. And soon after, really began dealing with a call into ministering, even though I didn't really act on it until on into college.
Wow. Now, you're ministering to people for whom that has got to be a very unusual story.
Yes.
And you feel you connect with them? I mean, having come out of a situation where you had strong faith influence in the home, early profession of faith, sense of call to ministry early on. How do you connect with folks that's not where they're coming from?
Well, it is a challenge. I liken it to cross-cultural missions, where there's an unreached people group that speaks another language. Ideally, there will be an indigenous pastor to shepherd those people. But the first step is someone has to go cross-cultural. And that's where I feel like we are right now. And so we are trying to communicate, you know, the story of God in a language they can understand. It's definitely an audience of people that many of them have been hurt by something done, at least in the name of the church, not necessarily the true church. But there's a lot of hurt and pain that we have to kind of speak past. So that's a challenge right off the bat.
Mm. Now you used, as we were just talking, you used the term church. That's not something you use in the title of the fellowship. Tell us how you work that out as you explain that to folks in terms of how you present to draw in and then how you educate within the congregation.
Sure. Well, with the name The Journey, the idea behind that is a generation or two ago, culture tended to be fairly close as a whole to at least the gospel message, understanding it. You could walk up to a person on the street who may not be a believer but could tell you who Jesus was, might even could explain the gospel to you, even if they didn't believe it. Today, that's definitely not the case. You know, so a couple of generations ago, we saw many people come to faith through knocking on their door, you know, because they were possibly just a step away. I mean, they had a context, they had a Christian worldview for the most part. They knew who Jesus was, they understood the gospel. So we could knock on their door, present them with a call, and they might respond in faith. Today, that would be highly unlikely. They are so far from coming to faith. They don't know who Jesus was. They cannot explain the gospel. And they probably do not have a Christian worldview. So back to the original question, the idea of the name is we are going to be a people that are willing to walk with people. That's the sense of the journey, knowing that there are probably many steps to them coming to faith.
Are you seeing conversions?
We are. We had our first baptism service in September, which was a year after we launched. We baptized 8. And it's hard to mark what we do by conversion sometimes as well. They tend to be stories here and there of people. I think of the stories of that Jesus would tell about sowing seed and different things like that. Sometimes I feel like we're doing work in ministry that takes place way before that parable even begins, cleaning up boulders and trash out of the way so people are ready to hear the gospel. So that might take some time. So we know that going in, and that's kind of where we're coming from. That's our heart.
Apart from your mother, whom you've already mentioned, who has been influential in your life generally, but also in the discovery process that leads you to define church in this way, perhaps?
Sure. Well, when I was my mother actually passed away when I was 12. And so right after that, I lived with our youth minister and his family at our church, and he discipled me early on, and it was a real growth time for me. And as far as and after that, obviously, you know, through school and professors and that sort of thing, as far as where I see our role as a church in our community, you know, I read stories of Jesus, you know, who taught in religious settings, who dialogued with Pharisees, that might even have been in some sort of formal setting. But also spent time really dialoguing with people in the marketplace and out in mountainsides, and that's how I really see what we're doing. We are trying to communicate the story of God to people who may be leery of coming into a formal setting. So in that sense, a lot of what we do may even take place in a coffee shop or in our living room as we have spiritual conversations with people. So I would say even half of our ministry takes place outside of our worship gathering or our formal teaching time.
And does that affect the way you view what the structure of the church would look like in terms of, say, preaching, sacraments, Sunday school? Does it look different to somebody who's coming in from the outside?
It might look a little different. The more they get to know it, we have, you know, things in place. We don't do Sunday school per se, but we do groups in homes. Now, some of that is we don't actually have a building. We use a sanctuary from a local church here in town that doesn't use theirs on Sunday nights. And
forgive me for interrupting, sure. But was that a conscious decision to choose a sanctuary, or was it just available? I mean, why not choose, say, an empty store?
Something very interesting happened when we made that transition, and this was a surprise to me. When we began meeting, we were in an old retail store, and we had our first meetings there, and you could fit 30 or 40 people or 50 maybe, mm-hmm. for Bible study, and we officed there still, but it became too small for us to continue meeting in. So there's a church that's right across the street that only meets on Sunday mornings. We started talking through the idea of using their space on Sunday nights. I thought I would really have to communicate with our people who are there with no church background at all. I thought I would really have to really communicate with them as far as preparing them for that transition. What actually happened was our people with a church background and a religious upbringing were the most uncomfortable in making that transition. And our people that had no church background were very excited once we made that transition. It was almost as if they were saying, I haven't really made the decision to follow God or to hear from God, but if I ever did, I would do it in a place that looked like this. So there is definitely this longing for a spiritual environment, even if they can't put words on it, that the unreached culture has. And I think we often assume, that they don't want anything that looks religious or churchy. And that may be a false assumption if we make it too quickly.
What's your pattern of teaching and preaching? I know one of my elders had visited several months ago on a Sunday night, and you were preaching from Leviticus of all books, I think. I can't remember when that would have been, but what's your typical pattern of preaching?
Well, we started in Genesis 1 when we launched in September, and we made the decision just to go through the scriptures. So we go maybe not a chapter a time, but we go straight through. So we're a year and a half in, and we just finished Judges 6. We spent about 3 weeks in Judges chapter 6 with the call of Gideon. And so we just walk straight through the Bible.
How long do you preach?
Our services are about an hour and a half.
Do you call it preaching?
Sure, we use that word. I mean, we call it different things. Sometimes we'll just call it teaching. Or Bible study,
okay.
Or preaching.
Okay.
We kind of use it interchangeably.
So you've got an hour and a half service, and how much of that is your teaching time?
Probably about 45 or 50 minutes.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Wow. You just made a lot of ministers jealous in the area, Stacey. You understand that.
I talk slowly as well.
You have some letters of complaint coming in.
I've got to ask you, though, it's intriguing. Why choose Judges? Mm-hmm. You're, I'm being naive now, but if you're speaking to unchurched folk, I would have thought the literature most difficult for them to grasp would be Old Testament, full of blood and murder and gore, and which Judges is. why not Acts or Philippians or something? What was the reasoning behind that? You bought a book on Judges and
yes, I mean, that might be it. That's one of the beauties, and I've heard people say this about using a lectionary of some sort. That's one of the beauties of going straight through the scripture is it among other things, it forces you to deal with the texts as they come up. And so we're our approach is we're telling the story of God. Almost like I remember reading about a friend of mine that was beginning pioneer mission work in Peru and with New Tribes Mission. And I remember they would live with the people, learn their language. That was often a 2-year, 3-year process. And then they would begin teaching the Bible and Genesis. So they were 2 years getting to know them, another 2 years explaining the Old Testament and Scriptures before they even mentioned the word Jesus. And so when they did finally share the gospel, they had a context by which to understand that. That was pretty inspirational to me, to give people a real context for the gospel as we get to it. Now, there's also the reality of there are people who are just there that one night. So we, as often as we can, we tie what we're doing to an episode out of the life of Jesus, for example. And it's often a very intellectual crowd who is who's aware that there is blood and gore and violence in the Bible. And that might even be something that's keeping them from really coming to hear the story of God, is they say, okay, this Jesus of peace, and then I read I know the Old Testament's filled with, commands to wipe out the enemies. They're already aware of that, even if they're not a Christ follower. And so we kind of take the approach of, let's start here, and this might be a big problem for you, and let's just start in a difficult place even.
Do you have a decided theological view on say the on would you call yourself Protestant or Reformed or evangelical, and would you use those sort of labels, or is doctrine sort of introduced sort of surreptitiously without do you have a confession, a catechism, or not?
We have, a couple of things. We offer an 8-week class that people go through, and that's the process by which they would become a member.
Mm-hmm.
We do that on Sunday mornings for 8 weeks. We do one in the spring, one in the fall, and one in the summer if we need it. I mean, we're just a year and a half in, so we don't have a set schedule yet. But during that 8-week course is when we have a week on church history. We have a week on God and Scripture. We have a week on sin and redemption, etc. We have several weeks on the church and how it operates. During that time, we also work through what we call a journey Q&A, which is, we developed it from a Reformed Baptist catechism that we got from John Piper's church, Bethlehem Baptist in Minneapolis. We adapted it a little bit in changing a little bit of the language just to bring some clarity to our own culture, but basically took it as it was. And we actually took the kids' version of it, which was painfully clear, on many points. So that leaves them about a dozen or so questions that they do each week, that when we come back the following week we spend some time on. So that's how we do that.
Is there a church covenant?
There is.
Okay.
Both of those things you can get to off our website.
Okay.
The covenant and the Q&A.
And tell folks your website.
It's Explore the Journey, one word, no spaces, explorethejourney.org.
And you go to the website and there'll be a place about us or something like that, and
right.
you'd find some of these things.
Right, you can click on anything that says partnership classes.
Okay.
And that's what we call our membership.
Now, we mentioned in the introduction that you'd been in Seattle. Did your idea to plant this kind of a congregation develop out of your contact with Mark Driscoll and the folks at Mars Hill and Acts 29, or is that completely accidental?
Well, our affiliation with Acts 29 came after the fact. We affiliated after we launched, really. And it's a neat network there with Acts 29. It's currently about 50 churches in America and some abroad. that mainly serves as it's nothing financial or it mainly serves as a relationship network.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those churches are planted back in the city. Most are somewhat ministering in a postmodern context, mm-hmm. to some degree, more or less. And they're all Reformed,
mm-hmm.
In that they affiliate with Acts 29.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a great association. We're the only one in Mississippi, so a lot of our contacts are out of state. But it still provides a great relationship. We do an annual retreat in Boulder, mm-hmm. with all the Acts 29 church planters, mm-hmm. and their spouses, and that sort of thing. There's some theological training
now,
that they
do
as well.
Now, do you have local church sponsorship as well for your ministry or any support from a mission board or anything like that?
We do. Where I served on staff from 99 to up till we launched in 04, Ridgecrest Baptist Church in Madison, they provided a lot of support to us up front and continue to. It's a 3-year process that just scales down every 6 months.
That's how we do things too. So. Yep. And North American Mission Board or state convention or anything like that, or is it just purely local church support and then whatever else comes in?
Local church support, and then it's very close to being, you know, self supporting, which is we're still a little ways from that.
Yeah.
But I mean,
a year
closer.
And a half in, that's great.
Yeah.
That's really encouraging. How would you characterize the church if you're sitting down with somebody and they says, okay, tell me where you're coming from? How would you use terms like Protestant or evangelical, mm-hmm. or what would be the kind of terms that you would use to describe the congregation?
I like using the definitions more than I do the terms, in that the terms are often a barrier for some people,
mm-hmm.
Where the actual concept the word's defining is not a barrier, but they hear the name. They might hear the name evangelical and immediately think of a very harsh religious right on a political talk show, mm-hmm. that's, you know, just combating, you know, people that disagree with him harshly.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to stay away from a lot of the loaded terminology, but we don't stay away at all from the definitions. As a matter of fact, when people come to the Journey, I think a lot of times they expect, just because it's a new church, they expect it's going to be very contemporary, for example, which it's not at all.
Mm.
It's our style musically is very folk-oriented, very acoustic, and very much indigenous to our neighborhood. Mm. And we do communion, if not... We're moving to doing that every week.
Derek, I'm going to cut you off because I'm looking at the clock and we have about 20 seconds and I want to get a couple of things in. First of all, Stacy, thanks for being with us today. ExploreTheJourney.org is your website.
That's
Do you have a phone number?
601-954-6820, and that's our church office.
We have been talking with Stacy Andrews, who's the pastor of The Journey in Fondren, Mississippi. Stacy, thanks for being with us today.
Enjoyed it.
Really enjoyed it. Derek, thank you. Have a good Lord's Day.